Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Monday to Thursday,
8 to 10 p.m.
Kaya 959.
On the street.
On the air. Well, thank you so much for staying with us. I don't know if you've been watching the Judicial Conduct Tribunal. This is obviously the matter between Judge President Selbin Benenge and Andy Swamengo. We had spoken about this before. They have come back and the tribunal returned yesterday. A lot has happened, and I think you may have heard in our news bulletins some of the issues that came up. But I just wanted our legal expert to just help us with a few things, just so that we can follow. You know, sometimes they get quite technical with some of the issues. I mean, just welcome Mpumelelo Zikalala, just to welcome you on Point of View. We haven't spoken to you in a while. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and also good evening to your listeners.
Thank you so much for making time for us. Can I ask you to help us unpack the sexual misconduct accused Judge President Selby Mbenenge, who it has now been decided that will not be cross-examined by the complainant Andy Swamengo's legal team after the application for such was denied by the tribunal? Just maybe talk to us, and there was a big, I think, well, a discussion, a bit like a debate, on the grounds of what the parameters of the tribunals are in the matter and what the act actually says. Help us with clarifying all of that for us, please.
It all stems from the mandate, let me call it the powers that are attached to the act, and what is it that a tribunal such as that one will be able to investigate. Maybe let's backtrack a bit and say, strictly speaking, that type of tribunal was not mandated or meant to look into issues of sexual misconduct, but it looks into the performance of the judge and whether the judge has acted morally or not, or acted in a way which is in line with the act which is applicable. So if there's anything in the act that does not talk about sexual misconduct and the manner in which it should be done when an investigation is done, it then means that those processes cannot be engaged in by the tribunal. But it doesn't mean that the door is closed, meaning the person then can then go to normal SATS and say, law enforcement agencies, I'm opening up a case of sexual harassment or sexual assaults. Can you please investigate this matter? And I want you to prefer these charges upon a judge. So no one would be above the law, including the judge. And then the normal court processes will then apply. And then they'll be able to do the first examination, which is there. So I think that is what the a bit of technicalities were. In terms of what is required and the manner in which things would have been done within the tribunal.
And so there was a lot of talk about what the act allows and what the act does not allow, and you spoke to the powers that obviously the tribunal has, but some of the what the act allows and does not permit or does not or omits, let me put it that way, had already been factored into the proceedings already. And maybe help us clarify that. The provisions for the both of them to have legal representation, my understanding is that it's not stipulated clearly in the act, but it was provided for. Help us navigate that terrain.
Remember, you'd have what would call it, let's call them general rules of fairness. One of those being one, the ad sovereign party rule that says I must be given an opportunity to respond to whatever allegations that are against me. Part and parcel of that opportunity to respond is to have someone who's going to legally represent me so that, one, I don't incriminate myself. Secondly, I'm going to be too involved or to be intimate in the matter, so I cannot be able to represent myself in a proper manner. So I'm going to need a lawyer who's going to be there. The other one, which is unwritten, is the formation of a tribunal. Independent individuals who are going to listen to the facts and the affidavits that have been presented, and then you take it from there. Now, to try and augment and meet each other halfway, we then say, what can we do so that we are able to mimic what the court is doing as much as possible, but not be able to ensure that there's strict compliance with what is there? Hence, we find affidavits that has been exchanged, affidavits of statements that are on oath, the allegations which are going to be there, the person is given an opportunity to state what the nature of the allegations, and then cross-examination will take place. But the tribunal itself will then be able to make a decision based on the evidence that has been provided upon them. So it's basically that level of compliance which is required and that level of adherence to what the actual act is saying in which they are under or which these proceedings are being dealt with. If the situation was the complainant decided, I do not want to lay a case in the JJC. I want to make sure that I go to the SAPS and let the normal processes take its course, then it would have been a different story.
And that's, for me, I think, is an interesting part for all of us mere mortals who are watching this, questioning ourselves in the decision by Ms. Mengo in going this route as opposed to the SAPS route, because what the outcomes would be totally different. So to your point about what it is that the tribunals actually asked to do is to look into the conduct of the judge and his performance as a judge. Not necessarily look into the matter as a criminal matter, for instance, and therefore different ways in which one would then apply the rules.
Yeah, definitely, but maybe she can be forgiven in thinking that we are dealing with a work-related sexual harassment case, hence it should be handled as such. But the omission was, we're not dealing with a normal employee, because you're dealing with someone who's a judicial officer, and the ways and means in order to bring them to book when there's been non-compliance or any mischief that's taken place is going to be a bit different compared to someone that's there. But at the end of the day, depending on the nature of the charges that you want to prefer against them, it would have been much better if the normal law enforcement agencies would have been followed, because she should have been protected through that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's obviously one of those where I keep thinking to myself, I'm interested in the reasoning behind the decision. She could have done both, right?
She could have, because on the one side she could have said my workplace environment has been violated, the rights which I'm supposed to have as per my employment contract and what you have promised me as my employer have been violated. But at the same time, there's also been sexual assault offenses that have taken place, and I need the law to play its course, either through common law or through the applicable legislation.
So let's talk. I want you to help us with the role of the experts who are brought in, as I think they're called witnesses in this regard. And having watched what we saw with Dr. Vetten, Lisa Vetten yesterday, it did seem that there were disagreements. Number one, in the relevance of her craft in being a witness for this case, and whether that was appropriate, sufficient, and whether it would assist the tribunal. Just maybe talk to us about how the decision comes about in making a decision on the witness. Who comes up with that decision?
Okay. Well, the person who's making the allegations or the onus lies is the person who's going to say, I'm going to bring in an expert that is going to assist me in the manner in which I'm doing things. Ordinarily, then the witness statement or the expert statement would then be submitted to the other party, or the other party will then go, can I be able to get an expert that is going to say something that is totally different, depending on the methodology that has been used by both. So if your expert as a defense is going to say something which is different from the one of the, let's call them the attacker or the where the onus lies, then they must be able to say, the methodology that you have used is incorrect, the facts that you have looked at is incorrect, independently, not knowing who the parties are or not attaching any identity to who the parties are, simply looking at the facts and the elements that are in front of me, this would be my conclusion, which is what this current expert was supposed to do. So when you receive information, you then say, because you're asking me to assess a difference between a two-way communications between two parties, I need to know what the responses are going to be, unless if I'm going to assume that the response from the party that was meant to respond was always, no, I don't want to engage in this particular manner. And that basis, then I'll be able to come to the assessment whether there was sexual harassment, whether it was wanted or not, and then send it from there. I think the mistake that happened in this one is the not assessing the full facts that are there. So you need to say, these are all the elements that are there. Name all the elements which are going to be in your favor and all the elements which are not going to be in your favor, because that's what being an expert is. You are speaking the truth regardless of whether it's supporting you or not. And then come to a conclusion and say, in balancing these two scales, I seem to align myself to this individual because they've behaved in a manner which is similar to this. Where do I get that source? We've done research. Research tells us when a person responds like this, it's not as if they are saying yes, but they are coerced in saying yes, or they fear in losing their job. Hence why they are going to engage in a manner in which they have done now. So it's not a yes which is authentic, but it's a yes which is fueled by fear of saying that if I don't agree to what this man is telling me, I may find myself in trouble the next day. So that's the type of assessment in which maybe the defense was trying to say, that should have been stated in your examination in chief. It shouldn't be extracted by us in cross-examination, because we are now exposing you that had that cross-examination not taken place, then the judge or the presiding officers would have been left with only one side of the story in terms of the complete one, in which you are supposed to bring and tell us as an expert witness.
Okay, so going forward, the judge president is going to be cross-examined. So who is it? Just going to be by the evidence leader?
Just the one evidence leader, and not the other party. Because even though the interested party, or they've made an application to be, let's say, friends of the tribunal, at the end of the day, they are not really in the intricate part of it. And then if you cross-examine that person and yet you came to the fore as a person who was going to assist me as the decision maker, then you're not really doing it. You are fighting someone's case indirectly, which is something which is not required. So it's on that basis in which they then say, let's allow only one individual to do the cross-examination and end it there.
Okay. Thank you so much for clarifying all of that. Really appreciate it. That's legal expert Mpumelelo Zikalala. They're just helping us clarify some of the stuff. And whenever we have time, we'll try and make sure that we give you as much information as possible on what has happened and has taken place in that tribunal.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.